Shomrabyug.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Sherlock, Sherlisten, the podcast that takes a pop at culture.
Sherlock, Sherlisten.
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 Oh, very good, Benjamin. I'm going to be speaking a little bit quicker this week than normal weeks because we've got loads of stuff to go through, including a quintet of trilogy of trailers for The Acolyte, Star Wars in Space this time, Alien or Romulus, Alien in Space. We've got a much-anticipated follow-up to something from the late 80s in Beetlejuice and a much-anticipated follow-up to something from a couple of years ago in The Pengwang. On top of all of that, Benjamin, it's been a week swimming in content to the extent that neither of us even remembered to go and see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. But what we did see was Roadhouse, and I've seen all of the two episodes of X-Men 97.
Sure, Michael, if that wasn't enough, and it is, we're up to the gills in content, Michael, up to the gills. I've also seen X-Men 97, both episodes. But come here to me, Michael. There's a bloody rip-roaring Chinese science fiction. A succulent Chinese science fiction, Michael, if you will.
Oh, go on.
Yes. And it's called The Three-Body Problem. It's out on Netflix.
Oh, how exciting. Look, we'll get into it, Benjamin. We'll do a deep dive into it. And by deep dive, I mean we'll probably have about 15 minutes left at the end and it'll be pretty fucking shallow. But Benjamin, 10 minutes. Yes. Look, speaking of pretty shallow, we got a cavalcade of teasers this week, which are all pretty shallow and probably aren't going to give us a lot of meat to discuss. So let's start with Star Wars, but this time it's in space.
Yeah, Michael, very, very new territory for the franchise. They're in space, and it seems to be about a bunch of people who control some kind of mysterious force that we haven't seen in the Star Wars universe before. Yeah. Really new territory for them, Michael. What I really liked about this trailer was the glowing swords.
Yeah, yeah. What would you call those? Even space sticks.
Space sticks, photon swords, lightsabers, maybe?
Nah, that's a bit on the nose, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a bit lazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit on
the
nose.
But come here to me. We're obviously being facetious here. But it looks like Star Wars is treading no new ground, apart from patting itself on the back for setting its story the earliest we've ever seen an on-screen representation of a Star Wars story.
We're running a risk that someone's going to say, well, actually, there's one scene in this that's set 10,000 years ago before the New Republic or whatever. But yes, it seems to be that this is in the High Republic era, a.k.a. a couple of hundred years ago when everything was grand, more or less.
Until a bloody Sith came along.
Oh, they're always coming along, those Sith, and going, there should be two of us. One of us who's a prick and the other one who looks normal but is secretly a prick.
It's going to become a bigger prick.
Yeah.
But come here to me, Michael. This, we didn't get much out of this other than the fact that Trinity's in it.
Carrie Ann Moss, Benjamin. She's doing Kung Fu as well. She's doing space Star Wars Kung Fu with what appears to be a very sore back.
Yeah, Space Matrix, Michael.
She's doing a bit of Space Matrix. Good old Carrie Ann. She's getting in every franchise.
Yeah, Michael, she was in Marvel there a couple of years ago. Pretty decent in Jessica Jones. She's a good, morally ambiguous anti-hero.
Yeah, she's in The Matrix, one of your favourites.
She's in The Matrix, Michael. She's playing Trinity. She's in this, and she does look to have a very sore or stiff back.
She does. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if they're going to explain that she used some sort of stiff-backed kung fu moves.
Her lightsaber actually straightens her back. It's like a brace.
Yeah,
it's a back brace. That's what it does.
I hope she doesn't have a serious back injury and we're being mean.
I hope not. If Carrie Ann Moss does have a serious back injury that prevents her from taking part in the full physicality required to be a Jedi, then we apologise. We didn't mean that. And we all have lessons to learn in that, Michael, as you often say, some disabilities are invisible.
Yeah, yeah, not all disabilities are visible, Ben. Ben, do you reckon Carrie Ann Moss is some sort of dropout of Jedi school?
Ah, she's a white Jedi, Michael. She's going to have a white lightsaber.
Oh, is she going to have a white lightsaber? Is that a grey Jedi or is
it's
that a
grey Jedi, Michael? And I imagine what we're going to see is Nah, well, I don't know, Michael. She could just be a Jedi that likes to sit in a mountain by herself. I don't know.
Yeah, she just wants to chill out on her own. Benjamin.
Yes.
This trailer is fan service the trailer.
Yes, fan service the trailer. It's pretty interesting. So the acolyte of the title, Michael, is clearly a Sith apprentice.
Oh, is it though?
Well, I mean, it looks to be quite a young'un going after the Jedi.
Go on.
And we'd call it an apprentice. You wouldn't call it the acolyte if it was a Jedi. So maybe, I think I remember reading somewhere that Sith apprentices are actually called acolytes.
Oh, maybe they couldn't call it the apprentice though, Ben, because people would think it was that Donald Trump show.
Or Alan Sugar.
Alan Sugar in the UK.
Yeah, I think I'd rather be apprentice to a Sith, Michael.
Yeah, me too. Than either of them. Yeah.
Than either of them. That would be better. Go on. Explain to me more about how this is fan service, the trailer, Michael.
Well, Benjamin, the whole thing is built upon homage to the previous movies.
Yeah. Look at that slightly shaved head with a rat tail. That's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. There's an Obi-Wan Kenobi look. But even things, every line of dialogue in the training is straight out of previous movies. So this is a trailer for diehard Star Wars fans. This is a trailer for people who, when a character in a training session close your eyes, you can't always trust what your eyes tell you, will immediately think, that's what Obi-Wan said to Luke.
This is where all that stuff comes from.
Exactly. So we're getting to see the Jedi, or as you say, the Jed guys, except no, they're not, they're all girls now, getting trained. At the height, there's no boy Jedis in this. They're all girls. Don't know what's going on there.
Jedi.
The Force is female, as they say, Benjamin. But we're getting to see them at the height of their Jedi-ing about the place.
Michael, unironically, if we made that into a t-shirt, I think we'd make a mint.
The Force is female. That's the Lucasfilm says that. That's a Lucasfilm line. That's not me.
Well, that's horseshit then.
Yeah, we'll probably get sued by Disney Lucasfilm if we made it into a t-shirt.
Yeah, Disney Lucasfilm. Did you hear about George Lucas this week, Michael?
What did he do?
There's a bit of controversy happening in the old Disney board at the minute. I don't know if you've heard about any of this.
Okay, well, don't spend too long on it, Ben, because we've got a packed episode.
No, there's a fella called Nicholas Peltz, and he's essentially ascending to the board of Disney, and he's a big backer of Disney's projects. But he came out with a very controversial comment this week, which was, I don't know why the whole cast has to be black, or I don't know why I have to cast all black people in my films. And people were like, some people were like, oh, that's just common sense, and then other people were like, no, Nicholas Pelt has kind of a history of not being great with that kind of thing.
Is his name Nicholas Peltz?
Oh, I'm gonna have to check it now,
because his daughter's name is Nicola Peltz. And she's married.
Rich people do that sometimes.
They do. That's what I'm thinking. So either you've got them mixed up or he's named his daughter the female version of his name, which wouldn't surprise me at all. Will you spin your wheels out?
I got it wrong.
Benjamin, I was pretty sure it wasn't.
God damn it.
Doesn't matter. Benjamin, what movie was he talking about? Because depending Nelson Peltz, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the origin of the term the full Nelson.
Yeah, so Nicholas Peltz is an investor, and he's currently trying to...
Who you've just slandered. Benjamin.
Nelson Peltz.
What movie was he talking about where he was talking about not casting black people? Because...
He made the comments about the Marvels and Black Panther.
Okay.
So he made it in the Financial Times. He's currently in the process of trying to win 2 seats from the boards. He's 81 years old, Michael. And if there's one thing America's not good at, it's cutting old people off when they're still coherent.
Benjamin,
don't do it very well.
He's a billionaire. He gave his daughter a career. She was in Avatar and one of the Transformers films.
Was she?
Yeah.
She indeed?
She's married to Brooklyn Beckham of the Beckham dynasty. Anyway, Benjamin, look, that's enough Hollywood
waste
gossip.
Waste across the board. Yeah, go on.
Because we've got another space science fiction doing a homage and making you remember all the good things that you liked, led by some mad elfla in Alien Romulus.
Yeah. Yeah. Aliens are back. And this time, they're aliening.
They're going to alien the absolute shit out of you. They're going to go right down your gullet and go... That's what this episode is mostly going to revolve around, ladies and gentlemen. Just Ben and I simulating getting an alien. Benjamin, I've had an endoscope. Yeah. Very unpleasant.
It doesn't sound good, Michael.
Oh, not great. There's a thing going down here and you're going... Wah, wah. And imagine if that was Alien.
I'd have less of it now. I'd have less of it, Michael.
You wouldn't want it, Benjamin. Anyway, this trailer, the trailer for the upcoming film Alien Romulus, Ben, it doesn't tell us a whole lot other than reassure us that it looks like the good ones.
Yeah. It's got that old school feel. I was fairly certain they just borrowed sets from any of the recent Star Wars films, Michael.
They said to themselves, they said, look, you remember Alien and Aliens, and everything was grimy in space and everything was kind of too low tech to really be in space. But look, don't worry about that. Everything was what people thought the future was going to look like in the 70s. Everyone was smoking cigarettes on spaceships and everyone was walking around in dirty underpants. And that's the vibe we're giving you.
Yeah, that's what you're getting. That's what you're going to get. Do you understand?
Yeah, and you'll like it. So, Benjamin, this is an in-betweenquel, one of your favourite types of sequels.
Yeah, so it's based on a bunch of little space colonisers heading up there and they find a derelict ship, Michael, and they go and they scavenge on the ship. And wouldn't you know it, Michael, they get more than they bargain for, more than they bite off more than they can chew, or they get more bitten off than even aliens can chew. And that's what's going on.
Very good. Benjamin, you said colonisers there with such spite and zeal. I like the fact that your disdain for colonisers even extends into space where there are no people to displace or enslave.
There's probably alien life forms, though, Michael.
Yeah, but they'll get you.
Yeah, well, it depends.
They'll go down your throat and go...
History often paints the oppressed as savages, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
So what you're saying is we need more xenomorph representation.
That's all I'm saying, Michael. When's the last time you saw a xenomorph politician run in Ireland? That's all you're saying.
We need more representation. Yeah. And if they bite your face off, then that's your fault. You colonize.
That's just them enacting out the pattern given to them by their colonizers, Michael.
Very good commentary.
You wouldn't say that about the flying geese, Michael.
Who are the flying geese, Ben?
The flying geese, Michael, from Irish history. Come on now.
No, is that not the Mighty Ducks you're thinking of? The Bash Brothers.
Anyway, this is a fucking film set in space and there's aliens in it.
Yeah.
And the aliens are no good.
They're no good. They're up to something as usual. But, I mean, we don't really get a lot to work on here other than it's not directed by old Riddles himself. It's directed
by... No, Fred Alvarez is taking this one off.
Yeah, it's Fede, I think, but...
Oh, sorry, Fede Alvarez. You're absolutely
right. Yeah. He's taking it on, but Ridley Scott is executive producing or producing...
Yeah, he's getting in there somewhere.
Getting in there, because presumably he's nearly 100 now.
Much like Nelson Peltz, Michael, 81, just doesn't know when to quit. Yeah. We're getting a Gladiator 2 at some point next
Good
year.
Good lad. Paul Mescal's going to be in it. Fabulous. Anyway, look, there's not a huge amount to say because it's a teaser, not a full-on trailer.
Look, it's called Alien Romulus. There's someone running around a ship. There's bloody space pods. There's gross endoscopy aliens coming out of throats
and going in horrible stuff.
It's no good, Michael. Look, you and I were speculating a little bit before this podcast kicked off. Why is it called Romulus?
It set on the planet Romulus? Is this the Star Trek Aliens crossover we've always wanted?
Like the IDW comics we all used to read when we were younger.
Yeah. Are they going to have to call in Shinzon to try and sort this out, Ben? Is that what's going to happen?
Oh, I hope so. And then Batman and Superman will come along and fight the aliens.
Yeah, that'll be fabulous.
That'll be good.
Can't wait.
That'll be good. We did have a small theory that it might have something to do with Romulus and Remus being raised by wolves, but we couldn't know, Michael. If they make someone raised by aliens, then it really ruins the franchise. Nope. Michael, I can't imagine
them
going
for
that
it.
Direction.
I'm all for it. They go to the planet and there's a little baby, and the little baby was raised by aliens, and it keeps trying to open its mouth and shoot out its pharyngeal jaw that it doesn't have. It's just gonna... Gross.
There's that beautiful anti-ASMR content you tune into this podcast for. Ladies and gentlemen, if that's the kind of content you enjoy, you probably enjoy this podcast all the time. And if you enjoy this podcast all the time, would you consider leaving us a review wherever you listen?
Give us a little review.
Michael, do you know what would make my week?
A little review from the listeners, I'd say.
A little review from the listeners would make my week, Michael. It really would.
Benjamin,
really
it would be really absolutely listen. Fabulous. People say, though, Ben, that if people give you 3 positive reviews in a row, you'll show up in their gaff and start doing a podcast.
Yeah, not magically or anything. It'll cost me quite a bit of money, but I will.
He will. He'll fly himself over. It'll be great. And he'll just go, day-o. Benjamin, Beetlejuice got a trailer. What's it called? Beetlejuice.
I don't know. I'll check it now.
No, it's called Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice, Ben.
Oh, okay. Well, it's called, then we're gonna get a third one eventually.
Yeah, yeah. That's the joke, I think. So anyway, look, it's another teaser.
Yeah, look. One of the things that
what?
It's a classic.
Spit it out.
It's a classic. It looks to be thankfully devoid of both Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis.
Two of your least favourites.
Two of my least favourites, Michael. Genuinely, two of my least favourites. But it's got a whole bunch of the original cast there. Winona's there.
Oh, yeah. Winona's having a big resurgence, so people will be glad to see her back.
People will be glad to see Winona. It's got bloody Catherine O'Hara, Michael, off Schitt's Creek.
Off Schitt's Creek and Home Alone, Benjamin. One of the most popular and actors of all time.
Yeah, Catherine O'Hara, great stuff altogether. It's also got everybody's favourite Tim Burton muse, which is slightly inappropriate for several thousand reasons. Bloody, her name's gone. It's gone in my head, Michael.
Helena Bonham Carter?
No, it's not. No, it's the young girl who was in Wednesday.
Jenna Ortega?
Jenna Ortega, thank you very much, Michael. Just vanished out of my head there for no reason. One of the things I found interesting about this, Michael, is because one of the things you could say about the original Beetlejuice is it's camp to the point of silliness.
Well, it's a silly film.
It's a silly film, Michael. Famously, Deo being one of the most camp and silly scenes where they use the famous song. Wait, is it Louis Prima?
Sure.
Why not? Daylight come and me no wanna go home, as the fellow would say.
No, he does. He does want to go home, Ben.
Oh, daylight come and me just want to go home. Sorry.
It's Harry Belafonte, by the way.
It's Harry Belafonte. Damn it.
Dale.
But anyway, very famous song, very famous scene where all the characters are kind of possessed by the spirit of Harry Belafonte and they do a little jig.
I don't think they're possessed by Harry Belafonte himself. They're possessed by Beetlejuice, Benjamin.
No, it's Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte. Good. Okay.
But come here to me. They do the what I consider to be the cardinal sin of trailers these days. They take a catchy pop tune and they turn it into a weird, echoey, choral nightmare.
Absolutely fabulous. Love it.
Why?
Love it. Love how ridiculous it is and how it keeps happening. And now they've done it in a camp horror comedy. Fabulous stuff altogether. This is my favourite time that it's been done.
Now, I think as a trailer, Michael, or as a teaser, as opposed to a trailer, I think they're intentionally playing with modern cinema. I think we might be going for the Deadpool approach to marketing here.
Go on.
Because it's very sombre in the tone of the likes of the Conjuring universe or in the likes of a Sinister universe, you know. It's very reminiscent of the Red Door trailer that we got a few months ago, where they're all standing around a grave and everyone looks very serious.
But then, Ben...
Yes?
Michael Keaton pops up and he's old as shit.
He's old as shit. He says, the juice is loose, yeah. Which is a very strange reference in 2024, Michael.
That's what he says, though.
It's an O.J. Simpson reference. That's in 2024, Michael.
Yeah. That's his catchphrase.
It's very strange. Did he say the juice is loose in the original Beetlejuice?
I don't know. I'm not.
I don't think he did.
I'm not willing to stake my reputation on that one.
Are they invoking O.J. Simpson as a symbol of horror? Is that what they're doing?
I don't know if they necessarily are. I've never heard someone say the juice is loose.
The juice is loose is an O.J. Simpson reference.
Are you sure it is?
I'll double check it for you now, Michael. Sure, Google is a thing.
Are you sure it's not just a phrase? Because it's like the juice is loose was...
It's right here, Michael.
Yeah, go on.
The first trailer for Beetlejuice 2 ends with a callback to the real-life scandal from the 1990s.
Does it?
Referencing O.J. Simpson's 1994 car chase. It's a thing that came up. It's a whole thing.
But But I mean, there was a Fruit Pastilles ad in the 90s.
The juice is loose?
It was about the juice being loose about this hoose.
So interesting, because where it comes from, Michael, is O.J. Simpson used to be called the juice.
Yeah, yeah, because
O.J. Orange
yeah,
juice.
Orange juice, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. And that's how it went. But famously, when he was being chased by police, one of the commentators on the news that were following the chase said, "The juice is loose."
But did he coin that phrase?
He didn't. But it became synonymous with O.J. Simpson.
Right. Okay.
I just thought it was weird. But anyway, we don't get much out of this other than Michael Keaton is old as shit and Winona Ryder is old as shit.
Ah, here. Leave one.
What?
The Winona Ryder's only a little bit older than me.
Yeah, old as shit. That's what I said.
Fuck you. Michael Keaton's like 75. Winona Ryder's only 50-something.
Yeah. Do you remember Michael Keaton was Batman again in that weird Flash film?
Yeah, and he was Batman in that little Oscar skit.
Yeah, he was the best part of both the Oscars and that Flash movie that we watched.
That Flash movie was no use. Anyway, look, I'll go see it because I liked Beetlejuice when I was a wee one.
Oh, Beetlejuice was a great old time. My good lady friend has never seen it, so I'm looking forward to forcing her to watch the camp classic that is Beetlejuice.
We've said it too many times, Benjamin. Anyway, look, speaking of Batman, good segue. The penguin is coming out.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of men with funny voices and a large amount of prosthetics.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that'll do. That'll do. Colin Farrell's well. The penguin.
The penguin.
Yeah, I still think that this whole thing is a fucking crime against ugly representation. Because people are always saying...
It's a bit mean.
People are always saying representation matters. But what about fat, balding men with horrible faces in their 50s? What about us, Ben? When will we be represented, other than Colin Farrell in ugly face?
Yeah, no, it's very strange. Yeah.
Get the bloody Lewis strange. Any day of the week you see someone who looks like the penguin naturally.
And what? Do you know what? We don't paint them as evil beings.
Ben, I have no interest in this whatsoever. I do not care to see another street-level penguin origin gangster thing about a version of Gotham without Batman in it.
Yeah, I don't... I don't get... At this point, Michael, I don't understand Warner Brothers' aversion to Batman, and I don't understand Warner Brothers' need to keep portraying Gotham without him. I don't get it.
It's copyright protection, isn't it? They're protecting their most valuable asset, which is Batman. They're trying to make money off Batman without devaluing Batman.
But Michael, they've devalued Superman down to the ground. We got a weird series about him raising his kids with fucking Lois for ages. And that's done quite well.
Yeah, that was quite good though, actually.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, Ben. Anything can be good if it's good.
Oh, is that what it takes?
Anything can be good if it's good, just as anything can be rubbish, even if it seems like a good idea. You can, for example, there's a very popular comic book character. You might be aware of him, right? Mm-hmm. He's called The Flash.
Oh yeah, he's good, yeah.
Beloved character.
Yeah, some would say one of the most beloved characters.
One of the most beloved characters. It's been around nearly 100 years, and they made a film of that, and it was fucking rubbish and upsetting.
It's pretty awful, yeah.
Exactly, Ben.
Yeah.
So,
oh, you're right.
And then at the same time, you can make a TV show about Lois and Superman going into semi-retirement to raise his kids. But if you make it good, it can be good.
I remember years ago, Michael, when you and I sat around a table for the first time with microphones, and we had no idea the evil we'd unlock. But I remember you saying to me, well, the thing is, Ben, we can make this good, and that requires us to do good, or we can make it rubbish and just do it that way. And I wish we'd picked good, Michael, but we didn't.
No, we went with rubbish, and that's what they've done in Warner Brothers so many times. Yeah. Look. I don't know. Do you have anything to say about the penguin? I don't know if I
actually
do.
I don't. I thought we might. I stuck the trailer in there. But honestly, Michael, it's a weird dramatic monologue that's intercut with violence frequently.
Yeah, exactly what you'd expect. It's exactly what you'd expect from the origin of that character we saw for half an hour in the Batman movie 3 years ago.
Yeah, I'm quite interested, Michael, in that I would imagine if you were to cut this or if you were to compare this trailer to the Batman trailer that we got a couple of years ago, it's very hard to distinguish which is which.
Yeah, I reckon you could just intersperse scenes and they'd look the same, which is, I mean, in a sense, high praise. Like, if you throw your mind back to when Marvel first forayed into television in the early 2012s.
Yes.
And we were super excited that the MCU was going to be on the small screen. But then, you know what they did?
What did they do?
They made it rubbish.
Well, they did. They made it rubbish. I remember that now. Jeremy Renner. They gave Jeremy Renner 6 episodes.
And it. No, I'm not even talking about Bloody Hawkeye. I'm talking about, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Cloak and Dagger and that era.
Michael.
What?
You've become a real reviser of history when it comes to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You shut up for a second. I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I will watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. any day of the week, but it doesn't look like the movies.
No, it doesn't. Not even a fraction.
It doesn't have the tone of the movies. It doesn't have the style of the movies. You couldn't intersperse clips from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the movies and not notice.
There's not a chance.
But hopefully with this you will be able to do that. But I don't know if that's necessarily a positive either, because why is this? Is this because Colin Farrell's performance was good?
Well, I mean, so I was watching this, Michael, and I love Colin Farrell. I do. I love Colin Farrell, unapologetically.
Remember when he was Colin Farrell?
Yeah, I think he's clawed his way back from being a joke to a pretty decent actor. He was the best thing about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And they replaced him with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, that was a bad move.
Colin Farrell's decent. In this, he's doing a really shit James Gandolfini impression, and I don't get why he's getting praised for it.
I don't know if it's a shit James Gandolfini impression. I think he's doing a pretty good job of being an overweight middle-aged gangster for someone from Castle Knock.
But we've seen that a million times.
Yeah, but this is my point. This is what I don't get about this is, does this purely exist because it's such a freak show, because Colin Farrell is doing such a weird performance? Because if they just got someone who looked like that and was from there and had that accent, would this be worth watching? Or are we watching it purely for Colin Farrell do this thing that he's doing?
Speaking of Irishmen doing bizarre accents, Michael.
Yep.
You watched Roadhouse.
I did watch Roadhouse, Benjamin. I watched Roadhouse in the way it was always intended to be watched. I gathered up a bunch of retired MMA fighters in their mid-40s, and we all sat down and we watched the tale of a retired MMA fighter in his mid-40s going off and becoming a hero in small-town America.
And yeah, that's what they all dream of, Michael.
That's what we all dream of, Benjamin. That's all I'm waiting for, is for me to be down on the wrong side of the track somewhere and to get dragged into an adventure about being the toughest guy in the land. It's going to happen one day, Benjamin. And so anyway, that's what's happening in Roadhouse by Doug Liman. Doug Liman made this, Ben. Doug Liman. The Bourne Identity, Doug Liman.
What?
Edge of Tomorrow, Doug Liman.
Those are pretty good movies.
Those are very good movies. And this is fucking mental. So, look.
Mental or bad mental?
Okay, long story short, right? I watched it with 5 men. 5 aging MMA fighters. And we had a whale of a time.
Yeah, the Burly Boys Club.
The Burly Boys Club. Actually, it's called Fist. The men of Fist sat down and we watched the Fur House Integrated Strength Team, Ben. I don't know why you're making that face. And we watched Roadhouse by Doug Liman with Jake Gyllenhaal. And we loved every flippin' second of it because it was great crack. Now, Ben, here's the big question. Is it good?
Well, that remains to be seen, Mark.
I mean, it's competently made. Jake Gyllenhaal's doing a thing. Daniela Melchior is doing a thing. She's in it. Your favourite, Ben, Ratcatcher 2.
I love Daniela Melchior.
Yeah, she's in this and she plays... You know the female character in movies about tough guys saving small-town America?
Is she very gentle and subdued and she kind of teaches him to feel again? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, she's that character.
Yeah.
She's great.
And
Conor McGregor plays... really stretches himself playing the role of Conor McGregor. coming in.
See, I
like an absolute
I'm
lunatic.
Kind of boycotting it on that principle. Because
so look, the all right. So here's the thing. Right, I was watching this, and as I said, thoroughly enjoyed it. Conor McGregor plays. The closest comparison to the role Conor McGregor plays is a combination of Conor McGregor's real-life personality and the character Bullseye from Marvel's Daredevil, played coincidentally by Colin Farrell.
Yes.
So he kind of plays that character. And I was watching it going, this is a choice. They've made a choice here. Because we get... We get all of Jake Gyllenhaal. So Jake Gyllenhaal plays Elwood Dalton, Ben. And without getting too much into it, he's a former UFC fighter with some sort of dark past.
Yeah.
Which explains why he's so tough and fearless and, you know, he's living every man's fantasy, Ben. Not every man, obviously, because this isn't your fantasy. But every fighting man's fantasy, Ben. He's afraid of one thing. And that's what he'll do if he loses control. Now, Ben.
Oh, yeah, that's not my fantasy at all.
You don't know what that feels like, but obviously I do. Because
well, you're a lethal weapon, that's Michael, registered in three counties. That's
what, Monaghan for mana and
Leitrim.
Leitrim. But that's neither here nor there. So we kind of know why Elwood Dalton is so lethal and cool and dangerous. Conor McGregor
plays a mama boy.
Yeah, but Conor McGregor plays the character of Knox, and he just shows up and he's absolutely fucking mental, and he's just as good a fighter, but we never even get a hint of why or how or who this guy is. It just relies purely on the fact, here comes Conor McGregor now, you know who he is, go with it. So, I'm not... Like I'm set. What I said earlier, he plays the character of Conor McGregor. Like, obviously, Conor McGregor is not that mental in real life, but the character that he plays in the movie is entirely based on you already know what this guy's about. So we're not gonna like he. I think he's Irish. I think, but I mean, we certainly aren't told. Or right. Like, is he a fighter? Is he a criminal? Is he what is nothing? Just they call him in and they go, get this mad fella, he'll come and sort it out, and it's gas. There, it's like it's very 80s in a sense of
okay,
you know, it's your classic man comes to a small town and there's gangsters and bullies and businessmen trying to drive out the locals, and it's up.
Oh yeah, that's classic,
and it's up to one tough guy to stop it all. But then also oddly modern and weird in some senses. Like some of the fight scenes are so heavily CGI'd. And I've not seen this level of obvious CGI being used for fist fights before.
Oh.
You know, I get CGI for someone's doing a big backflip and a triple kick split flip.
But, oh yeah, those triple kick split. Those are tough.
But when it's just Jake Gyllenhaal punching a man in the head, why go to CGI?
To protect his fists.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're underwritten by an insurance company somewhere, and they've basically been told, "Don't you damage those fists."
I think it might have been an attempt to get a bit more dynamism into the fight scenes, to make it look like these guys are unnaturally fast, you know, but
okay.
It doesn't really work because every now and then they go a bit rubbery.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's odd. It's an odd choice to have rubbery CGI fists in a film that's kind of down and dirty and gritty in its fighting style.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's an odd choice. It's a very odd choice.
Because in every interview I've seen, Jake Gyllenhaal won't shut up about how much work he put into being an MMA fighter.
Oh, he's ripped as shit, Ben. And by work, obviously, he meant steroids, did he?
I don't know. I'm assuming work means steroids in Hollywood, but I don't know.
Yeah. He is ripped. He absolutely 100% convincingly looks like he can fight.
Well, that's good.
100%. He looks like a fighter. He genuinely does look like a fighter. But then he throws a CGI slap and it gets a bit weird. It has been one of the greatest side characters of all time in a friendly baddie. You know, sometimes when they put a friendly baddie in?
He's a bit of a pal.
Yeah, he's like a kind of nice baddie. And
oh, yeah.
Great. One of the funniest characters I've seen on screen in years.
So we're not. We don't know who that is. No, is it someone famous?
No. It's not a spoiler or anything. No, I've never seen this actor before in my life. I don't know who he is.
All right.
It's just a funny little character. That's great crack. Anyway, look. As I said, I watched it with its intended target audience of retired MMA fighters in their 40s,
yeah.
And we loved every fucking second of it.
That is the target demographic. You did nail what they were going
100%
for.
100% that's the target demographic. They've based it on Roadhouse Benjamin, the 80s film that inspired most 45-year-old MMA fighters to become MMA fighters. So they're hitting every box. They're ticking every box all in one big go here.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's good. Speaking of things that have been resurrected for target audiences.
Very good, Benjamin. So you and I were both very nervous when there were revelations that the X-Men 97 showrunner, Bo from Mayo, or, you know, young fella from Mayo, if you translate it entirely from French. So
yeah, that's it.
Young fella from Mayo was sacked last week and we said, uh-oh.
That's not good.
Very last second creative changes are never a good sign when a new TV show is about to premiere.
Well, what did he do?
What did he do? What did he do? What did he do? So, Benjamin, I have a feeling that he's a bit of a dick.
He must be.
And I think he might be horrible to work with. And I'm starting to become of the opinion that those people make the best shit because this is fucking fabulous.
It's very good, Michael. It's very good.
It is across the board fabulous.
Because I went into this, Michael. I'm not an original fan of the X-Men cartoon that used to air on Fox. It never grabbed me. I think it was just a little bit too janky for me. And I was too spoiled by it as a cartoon thing. And I was like, this is too janky. I don't like this. But Michael, this is fabulous.
It is great. Benjamin, I sat down with somewhat of a feeling of trepidation on Saturday morning, would you believe?
The perfect time to watch a Saturday morning cartoon.
Saturday, I got my lady friend and I said, sit down there beside me. We're going to watch flipping X-Men 97. And she said, what is that? And I said, it's a continuation of the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. Written mostly by Young Fleur from Mayo. And we're going to sit down and we're going to watch it and we're going to enjoy it. And I was trepidatious, Ben. And I was trepidatious up until... And then I just started grinning like a fucking moron and I didn't stop grinning for 40 minutes.
Michael, this was fabulous.
It's fabulous.
I'm stealing Mick Leonard's most famous phrase. This is fabulous.
It's fucking fabulous. I loved every second of this, Benjamin. I watched it and I went up and I got all my X-Men, my Jim Lee X-Men action figures, and I went down and I put them on the sideboard in the living room and I left them there for about an hour before she got fed up and said, get them out of here.
Yeah, that's fair. That's also fair. But come here to me. There's two episodes released as of recording.
Yes.
And, I mean, so interesting, not only from a revival of a beloved cartoon point of view, but it's just a great X-Men story.
It's a great X-Men story. Not only is it a revival of a beloved cartoon, Ben, it's a revival, a continuation, and an improvement. But true to the spirit of the original, but better.
Yeah.
Not disrespectful of the original. Not like in the first episode we're going to twist all these characters to be more modern or, you know, show that this attitude doesn't fly now. Because the X-Men has always been progressive.
Yes. Yes.
But they haven't even changed the X-Men's politics to be more modern because they don't need to. It doesn't...
Especially not from that cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter what repressed minority you feel the X-Men represent. They represent all of them, depending on your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael, the best thing about this one is it's leaned into the bisexuality of every single character going. They're all a little bit on the gay spectrum. It's great stuff.
The X-Men are the randiest super team who's ever lived.
They definitely are, Michael. They definitely, Michael, it progressively got randier as we went along, because we kicked off with Gambit in a crop top and I went, right, that's a stylistic choice. And then we got a topless Wolverine. I went, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But Michael, where we hit peak Randy was Magneto's costume change. His bizarre long legging boots and shoulder gloves that he wears in his new costume. Fabulous.
With a big M.
His long Fabio-esque hair. Mm.
Oh, he's great. He's great. Oh. Ben.
Job.
Yeah, absolutely crazy stuff, but great, absolutely great. The biggest beneficiary of how good it is the character of Cyclops, who has been done dirty for 40 years.
Filthy.
And in a single episode of an animated show, is now the most popular character on the internet.
Best superhero landing I've seen in 5 years.
Look, Ben, they've changed how his powers work. Not explicitly, but they've changed how his powers work. Because if he's shooting that optic blast at the ground and that is repulsing him enough to slow his descent, then when he optic blasts Juggernaut, why doesn't Cyclops fly off backwards?
Well, Michael, that's his mutant power. It's if and when.
Oh, it's just a mutant power. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got if and when powers.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, Michael. All right, let's start with episode one. Let's get into this. One of my favorite bits is, and you're talking about his concussive blast kind of moving him around space.
Mm.
His little extra agility moves around the Friends of Humanity where he's like, well, I'm going to move over here. He's like Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk. It's fantastic. He's so enjoyable as a character in a way that I never thought I would speak. Because if there's one man who's destroyed Cyclops' reputation, it's James Marsden.
No, it wasn't James Marsden's fault. It was not James Morrison's fault.
Well,
it was the writers of those movies.
Yeah, they just got rid of him in the third one.
Yeah, they decided that the more compelling story was Wolverine and Jean, and they made Cyclops a boring dick. Yeah, and Cyclops should be boring compared to Wolverine, but Wolverine's an absolute fucking lunatic.
Yeah, Wolverine's not what you want.
Jean always chooses Cyclops, except in those goddamn movies.
Except in those movies, it's true. Or the threesome that they're in House of X for a while.
I'm not getting into that.
Oh,
that's too modern for me, Ben.
There goes our TikTok clickability, Michael. There it goes, just out the fucking window. But compared to me, there's a lot of fabulous stuff. One of the things I think is amazing here, and as you said earlier, it sticks to the spirit of the original but elevates it ever so much. But the animation, Michael, is surprisingly clean and smooth while still keeping some of the beloved jank of the original cartoon.
Yeah, the CG aspects of it are a bit more obvious than for a modern cartoon. And it's not super mega high budget. But it's good. The character designs are all on point. The animation is cool. The way they're using their powers is awesome. The title sequence is entirely redone in the spirit of the original, but with more expressive animation.
There's some fascinating stuff happening in that title sequence. And one of the big things that the internet seems to love about this, Michael, is that they've replaced a big error in the original title sequence. Mm. So there's a scene right at the end of the title sequence where the Brotherhood of Mutants and the X-Men are charging at each other across a battlefield.
Yeah, I would argue it's not the Brotherhood of Mutants, but it's just a collection of baddies.
you'd argue that with good reason, Michael, because for any keen-eyed observer of the original X-Men run or the Uncanny X-Men run, not the original run, you'll notice that there's a character there that is Thunderbird in the evil guy section of the
He's not a baddie.
Title. No, Thunderbird is a famous replacement character in the Uncanny X-Men run where Wolverine was introduced. That was when John Proudstar or... I'm just after forgetting his name. I just said it.
Thunderbird. It might be Warpath. Thunderbird, thank you. Similarly, it might be Warpath.
It could be Warpath or Thunderbird. Warpath is Thunderbird's little brother who takes over when, spoiler alert for a comic that came out decades ago, Thunderbird dies.
Yeah. So, Ben, there apparently is a reason for that. And the reason is that they made this in quite a rush. And they originally planned to follow that plot and have Thunderbird killed. And they said, maybe not a great look to kill our only Native American character. Let's invent a new character and kill him off.
Let's do that.
And
instead.
That's why they did Morph. And then when they were like, oh shit, we don't have enough baddies designed to run towards the X-Men in the opening sequence.
Yep.
Do we have any character designs lying around? They went, what about this Native American fella? Native Americans are sinister, aren't they? And everyone went, oh, how did you get in here? How did you? You shouldn't be in here. All right.
Oh, no.
So that's how that happened.
Yeah, so they've replaced him now with Lady Deathstrike, who Morph actually turns into in the second episode. Lady Deathstrike is there instead now, and they're running across the thing. But I have to say, the character that stands out the most for me, Michael, is Magneto.
Go on.
Fucking hell. What a great character. The monologues he gets in the second episode where the X-Men take on Donald Trump. What an episode.
Ben, this is what my generation have always expected of Magneto. Him standing up and going, you humans don't know what it's like. I was in Auschwitz.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a little bit more subtle than that.
They took the... Well, not in this. In fairness, he's pretty on the nose about it. But I think they looked at the X-Men Origins movie, took the best thing about it, which was... Oh, Magneto and Xavier used to be, like, best pals.
Horseshit, Benjamin. That's not from the X-Men origin. That's from the series. This is a continuation of an existing series. They were pals in that series. Ben's malfunctioning, ladies and gentlemen. This has nothing to do with the X-Men Origins movie about Magneto and Professor Xavier and Magneto are best friends who have a falling out about how best to go forward. They always have been. That's the point of the original cartoon. That's why Magneto keeps showing up and helping, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to help, but I can't help anymore because you're not extreme enough for me. And Charles says, well, why don't you be less extreme, Eric? And Eric says, no, I can't, Charles. Will we have a little kiss? And Charles says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to save humanity. And Magneto
goes,
I'm not
that progressive.
Yeah, Eric. I'm not going to save humanity. Forget I said the other thing.
So, one of the things that happens, and this is a mild spoiler, I think, for episode one of this. So, spoilers from here on out, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't want spoilers, just skip ahead here. But Eric is left the academy. He's left the X-Men school.
Yeah, it's in the trailer, Xavier's, in fairness.
It's in the trailer. Okay, he's left that, and he gets to take over. And everyone's like, what? Yeah, what's going on? And then in typical Magneto fashion, he's like, I demand you all respect me now.
Yeah.
He has to have several heart-to-hearts with characters who are like, it's not really how respect works, Eric.
Yeah, except for Rogue, obviously. She's like,
me now. Here's another little spoiler for you.
Yeah, go on.
Was this hinted at in the original series?
No. No, but this is a thing in X-Men comics. This is... long been a thing in X-Men comics that Rogue and Magneto have various relationships.
Taking the train to Pound Town, as it were.
As it were, because Magneto, blessed as he is by genetics, is the only person that Randy old Rogue can touch.
I mean, it's a damning indictment on Rogue. She has a man who loves her to bits and she's like, yeah, but you can't touch me.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know if that is a damning indictment, Ben. That's to say intimacy is not an integral part of relationships, Ben.
That's a fair point, Michael.
Yeah,
well done. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to How Are You Feeling? The new podcast from Michael Benjamin.
How are you feeling? How's the intimacy? Is it all right? Are things going all well? Are you getting your rocks off regular enough?
Anyway.
Yeah, go on.
Jesus Christ. This is a fabulous series.
Yeah, it's great.
Time.
It's great. Anyway, Ben. Great time. Big spoilers for the last second episode.
Yeah, go on.
Massive spoilers. So avert your ears if you can. Go and watch it. Don't listen to these spoilers, but then come back.
Yeah, we're shite. Go listen to something else.
No, don't listen to something else. Watch the program and then come back and listen to this, Ben. Please, Benjamin Colopy.
Give us a review.
Give us a review. A positive review, not the review Ben would give us.
Give us a terrible
anyway,
review.
Ben, Cyclops has been banging the wrong gene.
Is that what it is? Is that what's happening?
Oh, that's going to get him in trouble. Ben, so this very, very, very much looks like it's going down the Madeline Pryor. Goblin Queen arc, which in turn, especially with the hints about Rogue and Magneto as well, and Charles leaving the school to Eric, I think we're going down the route of a big old Age of Apocalypse.
You think so?
I think that's where we're going. I think we're going down an Age of Apocalypse, a Cable, a Madeline Pryor, Goblin Queen. Ben, Madeline Pryor is one of the maddest characters in comics. I'd love to get into it, but we don't have time this week.
All right.
I'm proposing that we maybe take a look at it another week, because the story of Madeline Pryor and that character is bonkalonkers.
Bonkalonkers.
Absolutely bonkalonkers,
right.
Ben.
Right.
How would you like to hear, Ben, the story of satanic pact Jean Grey clone?
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Sign
yeah.
me up,
That's
Mick.
What I thought. That's what I thought, Benjamin. That's what I thought. It's for all the people who didn't think Black Queen Jean Grey was kinky enough.
They ramped it up a bit more, did they?
They ramped it up a little bit more. They said, where can we go with this now? Who in the Marvel has a thing for kinky redheads?
Well, apparently, Michael, the creators of X-Men 97.
Yeah. Anyway, Benjamin, look, fabulous. Go watch it. It's great.
Yeah, it's great stuff all around. Speaking of things that might or might not be great, Michael, you've watched one of your favourite things.
Benjamin, we have a real four-body problem on our hands here.
Go on.
And that four, the four bodies in question, Benjamin, are the book series.
Oh, yeah.
More accurately known as the Remembrance of Earth's Past trilogy.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Commonly called the three-body problem, Benjamin, but that's the name of the first book. Almost exactly like Game of Thrones, funnily enough.
Almost exactly like Game of Thrones.
Because Game of Thrones is actually the Song of Ice and Fire, Benjamin, but the people generally know it by the name of the first book, Game of Thrones. And this is the Remembrance of Earth's Past trilogy, but it's commonly known by the name of the first book, The Three-Body Problem. Isn't that a funny little coincidence for you?
Isn't it just, Michael? Tell me more.
Anyway, Benjamin, the four bodies that I'm discussing are that book series.
Go on.
But, Ben, here's a problem for you straight away. You can't just take that book series and call it the original, Ben, because the original of that book series is in Chinese, of all things, would you believe?
Michael, I can't read Chinese.
Neither can I. I've tried. The characters just don't make any sense to me.
How could they?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think if I just keep looking at them, it would make sense eventually, but it doesn't.
That's, as far as I know, how I learned to read, Michael.
Yeah, you just sat there looking at Batman until it made sense. So, Ben, the original book series, obviously, in the original Chinese, then the translated book series into English,
yeah.
The Three-Body Problem, The Dark Forest, and Death's End.
Oh.
Then the third body in our four-body problem is Three-Body, or Sam T, I think it's pronounced, the Chinese 10-cent TV series of that book.
Good.
And the fourth body, Ben, in our four-body problem is Three-Body Problem. Not the Three-Body Problem, just Three-Body Problem. And three is a number, not the word. That's the TV show on Netflix.
Oh, very good.
So we've got four bodies to look at.
We've got four bodies in our three-body problem. How confusing.
We've got four bodies in our three-body problem, Benjamin. And really what we're looking at here is the pitfalls and dangers and joys of adaptation.
Oh, are we? Is that
especially,
what we're looking at?
Especially when something is very, very strongly tied to a culture.
Oh, like China.
China, for example, Benjamin. So the original book series, Ben, was written by Liu Xinzhen, an engineer, a science man. Not a novelist.
He's big on science.
He's mad for science, Benjamin. He loves electricity and stuff. And it was written in Chinese, and it was very, very well received, and a massive hit over there in China.
Succulent Chinese novel, Michael.
That's what they said. And then it got translated into English, Ben, and was a massive international hit.
Who translated it, Michael?
Ken Liu, I think his name is. I think. Hold on, do I have it here? No, I don't. It's in my bag. But the one translator for book one and three and a different translator for the second book. So
oh, very confusing. Don't like it.
Yeah. I'm going to look that up while we spin our wheels so we credit.
That's like when, Michael, an audiobook series changes narrators in the middle.
Would absolutely hate that, Benjamin. But I've news for you. I've never listened to an audiobook.
Michael, what?
I've never listened to an audiobook, Benjamin. I don't see the point when I can read it, and I can read faster than what's that guy's name? Ah, shit, that was going to be a good joke.
Toby Longworth?
No, Stephen Fry. I'm doing the joke again. I could just read it, Ben, and I can read faster than Stephen Fry can. Bollocks.
You edit this podcast. You can do this as many times as you want.
No, I'm not. I'm leaving that in. I'm leaving in my rubbish performance. I can read it faster than Stephen Fry can narrate it. Anyway, it is Ken Liu, I was right. And Joel Markinson was the second book. Ben, so the fun thing about this is the English translations of the original book series are broadly speaking faithful.
Oh, yeah.
Broadly speaking. There are changes, including some changes, a little bit of changes to minor characters and some people's motivations. But
just a little bit.
I can't verify those things because I can't read Chinese, as you said.
I can't read it either, Michael.
I can't read it. I can't read it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. You know what I don't understand, Ben?
Most languages that aren't English.
Chinese, yeah. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So there are differences between the original Chinese book and the English books. And the biggest differences revolve around the placement of the scenes set in the Cultural Revolution.
Okay, yeah.
So the Cultural Revolution, Ben, not a great time for modern China.
Yeah, bit messy.
Bit messy, not great. Mistakes were made.
Errors occurred.
Errors in judgment. Errors in social and cultural philosophy occurred. And, you know, there were repercussions.
Things went awry.
Things went a little bit wibbly wobbly. And the writer of this book has said, and look, this might be revisionist history, like when I started claiming that I didn't like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But the writer has said that he always intended the setting of this book to open on the Cultural Revolution and for the Cultural Revolution to inform the decisions that characters make in it.
So it opens in 1966, is that
yes.
what you're saying?
Yeah, it opens in the 60s with bad things right. happening during the Cultural Revolution in China. And yeah. those bad things inform a lot of the characters' decisions going forward. Both the air quotes, heroes and the villains of this of the books.
Yes, because it's the great morass of humanity, Monk.
Exactly. So the English version of the book do open with the Cultural Revolution scenes. The Chinese versions yeah. of the books don't.
Oh.
They're buried in the way in the back. So the English version of the book kind of has a parallel timeline progression of the two stories.
Okay.
Whereas the Chinese one, and again, Ben, this is just me going on what I've been told because I can't read it. The Chinese one does all of the modern stuff and then flashes back to the Cultural Revolution to explain why some of these characters and events are like they are. But right okay. towards the end of the book, by which time the censors have got bored and have stopped reading it because it's
yeah,
dense.
It's like, ah, look.
That's probably fine. So I've seen interviews with the guy Liu Xinjiang, and he, when he's talking about it now, he downplays the importance of the Cultural Revolution scenes. He kind of describes them as a little bit of flavor, a little bit of backstory. But I think it's
almost
because,
as if someone had a word,
as if someone might be kind of watching closely what he's saying. Like it feels odd. But anyway, look, Tencent, Ben. It's a great book. So look, long story short, in the book, there's something going on. Science isn't working anymore. It's gone all wonky.
Well, not science.
Now, people sometimes think science not working means, oh, there's no gravity or whatever. No. Scientific experiments, particularly in the areas of fundamental physics, isn't working anymore.
Because of the third body.
No. Don't be silly. You silly, silly man.
It's called the third body problem.
It's not. It's called the three body problem, Benjamin. The three body problem refers to a classical problem of
the Newtonian thought experiment.
No,
Michael.
It's not a fucking thought experiment.
It's a 2009 experiment about the effects of gravity on predictive models.
No, it's not, Benjamin. The three body problem is an issue that exists in astrophysics, where if you have three orbiting stellar bodies.
Yes.
You can't make a general equation which predicts how they will orbit each other.
Yes, exactly. When you have three best friends,
yeah,
and you only have one bunk bed in the Airbnb,
no,
it becomes impossible to know which two friends are going to get the bunk beds.
Well, look, you might as well work for Netflix, because the Netflix version of the description of the three-body problem simplifies it nearly that much.
You have expertly, Michael, woven my goblin mode antics into it. Well done.
Thank you very
I salute
much.
You. I'll
Thank
shut
you.
Up for the rest of
no,
this.
No, you don't have to shut up, because I like your contributions. I think it's part of a good podcast. Ben, what was I saying?
You were saying it's based on the the
so,
experiment or the idea.
Science is broken. It's nothing to do with three bodies, Ben. It's nothing to do with three bodies. Science is broken. And the fact that science is broken seems to be tied to scientists committing suicide and some mysterious video game that some of them are playing before they do.
Oh.
And I suppose the big question is it aliens?
But what if it's aliens?
And Ben, now we're going to get into spoilers, because we can't talk about this in any more depth without getting into spoilers. So, look, long story short, I've said that a few times. The Netflix show is good. Is it a faithful adaptation of the book series? Absolutely not. They've taken the ideas and the concepts, they've changed them, they've adapted them. But it's a good show. It's a good show with good performances and good acting. It has its ups and downs. We'll get into spoilers in that in a couple of minutes. It's well worth watching. And if you want to go in completely fresh and get all the twists and turns, now stop listening. Because by necessity, we have to start talking spoilers now. Okay, ready? So it fucking is aliens, Ben.
Classic.
So what happened was, this is a huge spoiler now. This is a massive spoiler. There's an old lady called Ye Wenji, and she had an rough time in the Cultural Revolution. And the long and short of it is, she manages to make contact with aliens. Nearly accidentally. And the aliens say, do not respond, do not respond, do not respond. I am a pacifist from my planet. If you respond, your planet will be invaded and you will be wiped out.
Yeah, classic shh, they'll hear you.
And she says, fucking grand then. We are rubbish.
Oh, what? Yeah.
She's like, oh, we're the fucking worst. You should have seen the shit we were doing to each other during this Cultural Revolution.
That's amazing.
We're wrecking the planet. Everything's rubbish. Head on over. Sort it all out for us.
She's like a Chinese Thanos.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And and then the plot of it is basically her and a network that she builds up are looking forward to the aliens coming. And the rest of the world is like, oh, this is going to be rubbish. Let's try and stop aliens from coming.
Yeah, we should probably work on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the gist of it. So the book is fabulous, great, hard science fiction, borderline doesn't have characters.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
which is great. It's fabulous. No one's worried about their feet. Everyone's just a philosopher. Everyone's thinking things out and figuring things out and writing things down on bits of
classic Asimov.
Fucking great stuff.
It's fucking lashing up there. Yeah.
And the Chinese adaptation of it, Three Body, is almost word for word and scene for scene the books.
Or, oh, that's good, isn't it?
Well, yes and no.
Oh.
Because, yes, it's faithful to a degree. But it also means there are several episodes of the Chinese show which are just people talking. Like 42, 43 minutes of people
That's
talking.
A lot of minutes.
Yeah. Because a lot of the book happens in people's heads as they figure things out.
Oh, but you can't. It's very hard to portray that on screen.
Yeah,
Michael.
Yeah. Especially if you're trying to do it faithfully, word for word. And obviously, Ben, being produced by Tencent and having Big China, you know, leaning over their shoulder, it's very faithful except for a couple of things.
Grand bunch of lads, Michael, don't know what you mean.
Yeah, well, they won't have any, like, they won't have any she brought the aliens because the Cultural Revolution was rubbish. That's not in the
series. She was just an embittered woman.
Yeah, exactly. Basically.
That's what happened there.
Yeah. So, here's the thing, right? And this is the big controversy about the Netflix show. In the Netflix show, there was a big controversy because a lot of the Chinese viewers and Chinese readers were shocked that Americans blamed China on this problem, basically. Which, when you leave in the Cultural Revolution as the cause of what makes the woman make these decisions, but then you move the rest of the story out of China, actually does kind of make sense, because you lose the aspect of the turmoil. You lose the aspect of the turmoil that China has gone through over the last 60, 70, 80 years.
And how people of an older generation would have borne the brunt of such tumult.
And how the newer generations respond to that, and how, you know, how life has moved on for some people and not for others. And, you know, the book is very much about that. But what this show does is leaves the root cause of it in China and moves the solution, or the attempted solution, to sexy, diverse, international Abercrombie and Fitch models.
Ah, boo.
Now, they do a good job. There's not a bad performance in this, to my mind. Even Isa Gonzalez, whose main job is to do this face.
She's looking at the sky.
Yeah, she's looking at the sky with parted lips and, like, a slight worried look.
It's called the panic pout.
Yeah. She just panic pouts her way through it. So I kind of get where the Chinese are coming from. Grand bunch of lads. I get where they're coming from by having them be the cause. Like, if you're going to take it out of China, why not just take it out of China?
Yeah.
Completely. Why leave?
Unless we're trying to create some counter propaganda from a US point of view. Don't suppose we saw sponsored by the US military logo at the bottom end of the credits, did we? Partially funded by the United States Defense Forces.
Yeah, the great thing about being us, Benjamin, is that we find that the Americans and the Chinese are about equally a great bunch of lads.
They're grand bunches of lads. Grand.
Not a bad thing to say about either cultural empire.
Either cultural thing, because we are being watched.
Hopefully. So anyway, the show is very good. It's a very, very good show, and it's a very different show. For one thing, Benjamin, the three books kind of start from one time period, one incident.
Okay.
All around this woman's life and the people she interacts with. What the TV show has done is taken the main characters from all three books and have them be five sexy friends. And in the books, these characters never meet. They're three entirely separate stories. So I kind of see what they're doing with it. It's a little bit clever in a way that they're setting up their protagonist for season two to be already involved from season one, and they're setting up their protagonist from season three to be already involved in season one. Mm. I kind of like what they're doing with that. If you ignore the improbability that all of the most important people in the past, present and future of humanity happen to be five friends from Oxford who are all sexy.
Ah, oh, the insexification of everything.
Yeah. But the show's very good. I've been thoroughly enjoying it. And my lovely lady friend, who has not read an inch of the books, is thoroughly enjoying the show.
She listened to the audiobook?
She hasn't listened to the audiobook. She said, I'm not listening to that. That's Stephen fucking Fry just telling me what the book says. I could just read it myself. I could just read the words myself much faster than the actor Stephen Fry. He puts too much drama into everything. Takes too long. Fucking move it along, Stephen Fry. Fucking Mark Strong. Get on with it, Mark Strong. Jesus Christ, why would you get Mark Strong to read your audiobook? He's the slowest talking man in the world.
He does have a very measured cadence, Michael.
Anyway, Ben, look, I have a few criticisms of the show, mostly in terms of simplification of stuff, but I get it. I understand why.
It's TV, Michael.
It's TV. It's a different medium for a different audience. I get it.
The subtlety of literature is often lost in the transition to the silver screen, Michael.
I get it, Benjamin. I understand. But it doesn't happen to me too often that books that I really like get turned into movies. Because generally books that I get really like will never get turned into movies. But go on, say something cutting.
Mainly because they were written in Chinese.
Yeah. I can't read Chinese, no matter how much I tried.
I wasn't going to say
something. So anyway, that's the four-body problem, is the three bodies and the other thing.
The bunk beds, yeah.
Shut up!
It's rough stuff.
Stop it!
Stop. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think the three-body problem is?
Tell us down below.
Is it bunk beds? Is it when you've only got two Cadbury's cream eggs and you've got three little pals that you need to give them to? Ladies and gentlemen, touch us in a few different places and let us know. You can find us on the interwebs at www.seanrabeag.com, SEOMRABEAG.com.
It's tiny room in Irish, kind of.
Find us sort of maybe a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, we're also up on the interwebs on a second website for some reason, www.shalookshalistenpodcast.acast.com.
We'll probably merge them into one someday, Ben.
Oh, someday to save ourselves some money, because Lord knows we're not making any off this podcast.
No, it costs us
money. Come here to me. You can also find us on Instagram, where they've kind of taken us out of prison a little bit.
Oh, are we doing all right again?
No, I mean, we're doing grand. We're doing better than we were. But right. You can find us there at Sherlock Shalison Podcast. You can find us on TikTok at Sherlock Shalison Podcast. But we're actually doing okay. We're doing fine.
Find us up there then.
We're doing fine. Go hop over there and give us a listen. Ladies and gentlemen, you can join us. Join us live and in person, where we can debate the merits of Stephen Fry's narration. Till the cows come home. You can find us up there on our Discord. You can check down below in the description. Click and hop up on it.
Get up on it, for God's sake.
But ladies and gentlemen, if you can stand both of us still towards the end of this episode and you've made it this far, you probably quite enjoy us. So please give us a review wherever you listen.
Give us a review. It's great for us.
It's great for us. You can join us next week, ladies and gentlemen. Take a look at if it is a Eurojank game. What do you mean it's a Eurojank game? Explain yourself, gaming industry. And
I don't know what that means. I'm very excited for next week.
It's going to be very good. It's going to be enjoyable. I think
there'll have been another episode of X-Men, Ben.
I'm going to have another episode of Sexy Bisexual Magneto.
Oh,
great.